Alan Kohler here with another daily CEO interview for the Constant Investor, and today it's Matt Gill, the CEO of White Rock Minerals. Now, this is in line with our policy of bringing you all sorts of different types of companies, and we haven't done too many mineral exploration companies, of which White Rock is one. And the thing is that the small cap mineral sector has been going crazy on the ASX in the last few months. A lot of stocks have been going up a great deal, and in fact, you'd probably have to say it's the best performing sector on the market at the moment, except for White Rock. And the thing is, I didn't think it'd be worth talking to a stock that's gone up a lot, because it's probably too late. White Rock has not gone up much. It's capitalized at less than $12 million, and that's partly because nobody's really cottoned onto the value of its two assets. Now, it's got Mount Carrington, a gold and silver mine in northern New South Wales, and it's got a multi-minerals asset in Alaska called Red Mountain, which it bought 18 months ago for not much more than $1 million. In fact, I think it was $1 million in White Rock script. Now, the scoping study of Mount Carrington puts a net present value on it of $60 million. And Matt Gill reckons the Red Mountain deposit in Alaska is worth $50 million. So that, you know, scaling it back a bit, we're talking about $100 million of value for about 11.8 million market cap on the market. So it's possible that investors will sort of cotton onto this and send the stock up a bit over the next few months, in line with what's going on in the rest of the small cap mining sector. So it's worth having a listen to Matt Gill anyway. It won't be the last small cap mining company we do, but it's the first for a while. Here's Matt Gill, the CEO of White Rock Minerals. White Rock has two projects, essentially. I mean, two major projects. You've got Mount Carrington and Red Mountain in Alaska, Mount Carrington in northern New South Wales. Let's just focus on Mount Carrington for a moment. There's been a scoping study. Is it a feasibility study as well, or just a scoping study on Mount Carrington?
So scoping study was done in 2012 and updated on two occasions. And we've just taken that the next step, so the further detailed analysis to pre-feasibility study level.
And did the study come up with a net present value on the project?
So it came up with a free cash flow over the first 4.5 years of about $36 million undiscounted, and a rate of return of about 34%.
Right.
Now, I need to just unpack that a little bit. That's on the gold half of the resources that sit at Mount Carrington. There's still something like 8 million ounces of silver, which reside in the scoping study, but we're yet to take forward into the feasibility. So those financial metrics I've mentioned are just on the gold half of the plan, and the silver is to follow.
So what's the net present value, do you think, of Mount Carrington, if you include silver?
So at a scoping study level, the NPV, well, with silver included in the scoping study, it was a seven-year mine life, and it had an NPV 10 of around 60 million Aussie. Yep.
And so your market capitalization is a bit less than 12 million. So
yes.
So obviously a bit of a discount there. I mean, what do you attribute that discount to? I mean, is there any doubt that this thing's going to get up, Mount Carrington's going to turn into a mine? I suppose the question is, can you fund it?
So one of the unique aspects of White Rock is that even though we haven't completed a full feasibility study, nor have we completed the full permitting, we already have a term sheet in front of us from a private equity group in New York to fund the construction and commissioning of the mine. Now, that's subject to a few conditions, including completing the definitive feasibility study and the permitting. But that makes us unique. I don't know of any other ASX company that has a finance facility already in front of it 2 years out from using it. Yep.
What sort of money is that?
It's a $19 million US facility.
Is it a debt facility?
No, it's a gold prepaid. So essentially, and they're currently our second largest shareholder with a guy on our board. So they've got skin in the game and equity up front. When we come time to draw on that fund, that money to build, we can draw on that over the course of the year, the 19 build the mine. In return, they will get 20% pre-tax revenue over the following 7 years. So it comes out of production. It's pre-tax. It's not a hedge. It's not a debt.
It's off the top line, is it?
That's right, pre-tax, correct. Essentially, they'll get $2 back, dollar we draw on.
Right, I see. And is $19 million enough to build a mine?
$19 million US on our numbers is a bit short of that. That's about 25 Aussie. We'll probably need to find another 5 to 10. Now, that will either come from extending the terms on this gold prepaid with Cartesian, that's their name, out of New York, and, you know, options, whether that be, you know, equity, be a hedge, you know, whether it be a bit of debt. But finding another 5 or 10 is a hell of a sight easier than many companies, as you would know, get to, where they've got to find multiples of their market cap to build a mine. We've certainly, you know, significantly broken the back of that with this gold prepaid facility.
And that's all partly because Mount Carrington was a mine before, isn't it? It's got a fair bit of infrastructure around there already, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's got a great head start, Alan. It's on a mining lease. It's on state forest. The two gold pits are already pre-stripped. There's already a tails dam there, a water dam. There's about $20 million of infrastructure from the previous operation in the 90s that we don't have to put in, and that's significantly helped, obviously, also ease the capital burden that we have to find to build it.
You dropped out a bit there. Was it, what did you say, 1970s, was it?
So Mount Carrington Mines, it closed in 1990. It only went for about 2 years, and they struggled for a variety of reasons, but they left us with two gold pits where you walk onto the ore, and they left us with about $20 million of infrastructure that we don't have to build.
So you don't have to clear any overburden?
No, that's right. You're exactly right. To start off, you walk onto ore. I mean, obviously, as we go, we will remove waste, but there is no overburden pre-strip, correct?
So when as things stand, as you look at it, when will you start achieving cash flow out of Mount Carrington?
Yeah, very good question. So the feasibility study that we released between Christmas and New Year describes that. You know, the technical aspects are covered. The mining, the geology, the metallurgy, the flow sheet. There's about an 18-month approval process through the New South Wales government system, and then there's a year to build and commission. So
18 months approval? Gosh. Oh, it's already been a mine. Why do they need another 18 months? Heavens above.
So we're being prudent in allowing that. We ourselves have got 6 months to complete the critical baseline studies that go into the environmental impact statement. So 6 months of that is in our court. And then we're allowing 12 months for that EIS, for the public submissions, for responses, etc. It will be a project of state significance, according to the government. But we will get people that I'm sure may have some, hopefully, you know, there'll be lots of positives, but there'll also be a few, I'm sure, that probably don't want much to happen in their backyard at all. So we at White Rock are being prudent by saying 18 months in terms of, you know, we believe we'll come inside that. But as you know, part of it's managing expectations. And some of that timeline is out of our control when it's in the public domain.
So it's approval process, then the build. So it is probably at least 2 years. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. So our plans show gold production before the end of 2020.
Yeah, right. At least you're not fracking anything, so maybe...
No, correct. and it's had previous mining. I mean, the key point, it had previous mining with cyanide leach. It's on state forest. You know, if it was pristine farmland, you know, we are 2 hours inland from Byron Bay, so it is environmentally sensitive. You know, we're at the headwaters of the Clarence River, so we're very attuned to other land users and stakeholders, and hence the prudence in what we do I'll just unpack that a little bit more, Alan. I worked at Beaconsfield in Tassie and also the Ballarat Gold Mine. And so I'm used to gold mines in, you know, deep in community territory rather than outback WA or Alaska, as an example. And there is a process that you've got to do with respect and allow the time for that. And I guess I'm just bringing those experiences to bear with Mount Carrington and being realistic about it.
Is it a well-known gold province inland from Byron Bay? Is it known that, I mean, obviously there is a bit of gold around there, but, I mean, are there any other mines?
So this is a collapsed volcano, so it's quite unique in that respect. There are a couple of silver deposits within 100 kilometres. There was a gold mine nearest. There's another silver mine across the border in Queensland. So they're small, you know, they're not your big Rio or BHP size mines. But there are a few in that North England, New England belt, yep. Not as prolific as Kalgoorlie, though, of course.
No. So turning to Alaska, you bought the Red Mountain deposit 18 months ago. How much did you pay for it?
So we paid $1 million in White Rock paper. And since that time, we've spent about $300,000. We expanded our footprint, so our claims footprint tenfold, to take a strategic position there. And during last year, we announced the maiden JORC resource on that zinc VMS project, which immediately put it in the top quartile of undeveloped zinc projects in the world.
Is it only zinc, or is it other minerals? Just describe the deposit, and also tell us where it is. Is it near a town?
Yeah, so I'll do the answers in reverse. So it's 100 kilometres south of Fairbanks, which is Alaska's second largest city, and it's in central Alaska. So we're not Arctic Circle, but it is true there's a winter. We're in the foothills of the Alaskan Range, so we're not in billy goat country. And we're 85 kilometres from the nearest road and rail. So it's not, you know, extreme remote that a lot of people probably think Alaska is. But there is a winter that stops you doing on-ground exploration. Once you're up and mining, there's no issue. So we're 100 kilometres from Fort Knox, you know, the famous gold mine. And Sumitomo also operate a very large mine called Pogo in the near vicinity. So it's in a good part of the world. The geology, in answer to your other question, it's a polymetallic. It's a volcanogenic massive sulfide, so it's VMS. And in order of value, it's zinc, silver, lead, gold, copper.
And you'll be mining all of those things, will you?
Correct. I don't know if you know Rosebery as an example. So it's a sulfide where all of these minerals are present in the ore body, correct. And so we'll be producing probably two concentrate streams. But recovering all of these metals to varying degrees, correct.
Have you done any scoping study on that?
So there was some initial metallurgy test work that shows it's coarse-grained and easy to recover. The JORC resource was our first step. We actually did give that to some consultants to tell us, you know, how much more do we need to have a viable mine, and we're already halfway there. Which is a great start for us, given that we've only had it 18 months, and hence the desire to get on the ground and add to that resource this year.
You mean you're halfway to having enough resource for a mine?
Already, correct. And that's there are two known deposits. When we acquired it, it came with a 127 drill hole database that generated the JORC resource. The reason we expanded our strategic footprint from 15 square kilometres to 140 is that the public domain geochemistry and geophysics identified 30 similar targets to these two known deposits. So given that the two known deposits are open, down dip and in places along strike, and there are 30 similar signatures elsewhere, we think there's every reason to believe that, you know, we can, you know, add and hopefully more than double what we've already got.
Well, I was going to say another way to look at it is you're only halfway there to having a mine.
Well, in an exploration phase, this had sat private, unlisted. The last drilling was done in the 1990s. The last modern exploration was done by the Alaskan government in 2007. So it sat unloved and idle for 10 years. And so for someone to acquire something and in 18 months to not only have a JORC, you know, globally significant resource, but also have material that puts it well on the path in 18 months, I would say is a you know, and that's what actually got White Rock, you know, pretty excited. And it's hard to, you got to love both your children, Mount Carrington and Alaska, but certainly Alaska presents significant upside and opportunity, we think.
I guess the point is that Alaska's not in your share price. It's all about Mount Carrington. And
correct. Absolutely.
And if you bought White Rock, you're getting a free option on Red Mountain in Alaska.
Exactly. And that's my frustration and a lot of shareholders is that, you know, White Rock listed with Mount Carrington in 2010. So and exactly your observation, our value is Mount Carrington because we've had it for so long. Part of my role as the MD is exactly these conversations I'm having with you. We met at the Microcap conference. One reason I'm in Vancouver is to get our story out there so that people can see what we've got. You know, the resource is less than a year old. The work that we've done is you know, yet to be on the ground. And so getting the story out there and getting that recognition is a key part of my role at the minute.
Well, indeed, because, you know, all the small-cap mining companies, exploration companies are all going crazy at the moment, except you.
Yeah, I know. I don't know whether it's me. talking to the right people. But it is, I agree, I don't understand. I mean, we're not nuggets in Pilbara and we're not lithium, but we are zinc. I mean, you know, zinc, as you would know, is, you know, 10-year highs.
I know, but you don't use it in batteries, though. That's your problem.
Well, actually, you can. I can send you an article. New South Wales Uni have been able to demonstrate that you can use zinc in batteries, and that's the risk with lithium as a you know, substitution risk. But as you know, zinc still, like copper, is, I don't know, copper's in batteries, but you know, zinc is a mainstay of the manufacturing industry, as you would know. But there is an angle for it in batteries, and in fact, in one of my presentations, I cheekily put that article in. It from Mining News, just to stir the possum with the lithium, you know, EV groups.
Well, I suppose there's also the listed company Red Flow, Simon Hackett's business, that uses zinc bromide batteries. So there are batteries that do have zinc in the name of them.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So it's a 40% zinc, a 30% silver. You know, there's actually twice as much silver in Alaska as we've got at Mount Carrington, and there's about 300,000 ounces of gold in Alaska, which is the same amount as we've got at Mount Carrington. So the metal endowment in Alaska is significant, and trying to get that value into our share price is my challenge.
What about your cash position? Obviously, that $19 million what's the name of the business? Cartesian, did you say?
Cartesian.
Yeah, that $19 million is to build the mine at Mount Carrington. Have you got enough to keep the business going in the meantime?
So we've got, as at the end of September, our quarterly's not out. At the end of September, we had a bit over $2 million. And the challenge for us now is, what do we do? You know, we've got two children, two assets, Carrington and Alaska. The short answer is that we don't have a balance sheet to fund both. That's self-evident. And so we're in the process of working out what our options, you know, raise money, joint venture, merge, put one of them on the TSX. So we're in the process. And so part of my role is, and going to Vancouver, is to see what interest there is in the asset, whether people, you know, want to come on board the story, and whether that's at an equity level or an asset level as a joint venture.
What do you think Red Mountain in Alaska is worth?
So DJ Carmichael did independent valuation where they looked at comparable transactions, so arm's length sales of similar assets, and there were six of them, and a couple in Alaska and Yukon and so on. They also looked at the enterprise value of those companies, you know, per ton, and they came up with a value of around $50 million, or 6 cents a White Rock share, put it that way.
Yeah, right. Well, you could sell it entirely and fund Mount Carrington yourself and give the whole lot of money back to shareholders. How about that?
That's exactly one option, or the other way around. or go and keep that money and add the value and do it ourselves, at least for a year. Yeah. You know, extract some of that value by getting on the ground ourselves. So all sorts of options. I've talked to TSX companies. We've had a few people in our data room, you know, looked at what a shell might look like or a merger. You know, we're obviously considering if there are people that might like to fund White Rock to do it. Exactly as you say, you know, do we look at, you know, sale options, JV options? So we're in a great spot. It's just our market cap is disappointing, and yeah, it's always nice to have more money.
Oh, it is always nice to have more money.
Yeah.
Well, good to talk to you, Matt. Thank you. That was Matthew Gill, the CEO of White Rock Minerals.
The Constant Investor.